Accession number 13668, reel 3.
Mr. Adams, reel 3.
Well, shortly after D-Day...
You were just about to give his answer.
That's right, yes. Yeah. Shortly after D-Day, he said, I was buzzed by a German fighter. And the only thing I could do in defence was to turn in circles, because he couldn't turn in as small a circle as I could. And so there was I turning in a circle, and he was turning with me outside my circle. And he said, I swore that if I'd had a Sten gun with me, I could have shot the bugger down. So that's how we carried on communication with our agents. But things got tougher and tougher, and from the point of view of putting people through. And then, of course, the big push came. And
but did you get any evaders and escapers out?
Not in the Nijmegen area. There was more success down the Beeterbosch, which was in the with the Canadians down, and that of course is how Shan Hackett came out. You see, Shan Hackett, the original idea was to bring him out across the Nieder Rhine. That was a very, very difficult, would have been a very, very difficult operation. And what made it completely impossible was that he insisted on bringing his guide with him. Now, whereas it is possible to get three men in a two-man canoe, it is certainly not possible to get four. And so we had to say, well, we will mount an operation. Mind it, it'll be a very risky one, and try and get you out. But no way can we bring your fellow out. And not only that, because of the flooding, we had to get up to this dike with two canoes, and the dike was then being on the south side of the Nieder Rhine, was patrolled by the Germans. So we'd have had to set up an infrared light. this was for navigation purposes. If you had an infrared light, which could only be picked up by an infrared camera. So to get back to the right place, you'd have left an infrared light on the south bank, and having got to the north bank and picked up your whoever it was from your camera, you could have picked up the red light on the south bank and got back and made certain you got back in the right position. The whole thing was very much too chancy, and in the end, he came out through the Beeterbosch, which where conditions were not quite so fixed as they were in the what they call the island, but the island that is that part between Arnhem and Nijmegen. And so that was it. After the, as soon as we got into Germany, IS-9's role was to get to the prisoner of war camps as soon as possible. And
did you do that?
Yeah. Funnily enough, it was not a very pleasant in ways, because what they were looking out for, actually, MI9, was those lads who had not behaved themselves as prisoners of war.
You mean collaborators?
Yeah. And we had two lists. One of those who were three lists, actually. One, people who'd been members of escape committees who had a special form to fill in as to, you know, how effective various things were. Two, possible collaborators. And three, outright collaborators who were immediately arrestable. And the problem with the was really with the second case. There weren't many, there were very, very few. But when you had one of these doubtful characters, what you were supposed to do was to take a couple of responsible returning prisoners on one side and say, look, this is the situation. Would you please keep an eye on so-and-so and make certain he gets back to the United Kingdom? Which I can think of one case in particular where the chap concerned, he must have got wise or something because he disappeared in Brussels on the way back. The ones who were definitely known to be collaborators, you arrested them on the spot.
Were any of those ones who had actually fought in the Germans' forces on the...
Oh, no, no. No, 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 nothing. No, these were people who had come from prison camps. I mean, the only one that on the list that I came into contact with at all on that particular definite arrestable had been a NAFI manager, I remember. I can't remember his name or anything, but...
Which camp had he been in?
Oh, I don't know. There were so many of them. But and of course, that was it. That was really the end of MI9. And
What kind of information did you want to get from members of escape committees?
Oh, how effective, for example, little things that were sent through the Red Cross were, and all that sort of thing. Aids to her. I mean, MI9 was concerned to assist them in their laudable project, which was to escape. And of course, therefore, they would devise means. I can't remember offhand of. Helping them through the, I suppose, Red Cross boss, I don't know, offhand, but this is what they wanted to know, how effective their, or ineffective their help had been to these people. And so far as the collaborators were concerned, of course, or suspected collaborators, it was just a question of justice, I suppose. But then, of course, that was the end of the war, really. And I had no desire to go back to regimental soldiering again. I was offered a job, I think, an intelligence job with the airborne who were about to go out to Palestine. But I thought the best thing to do if I was going to hang around and enjoy the fruits of victory was to become field security which amounted to chasing Nazi villains.
In Germany itself?
In Germany itself, yeah. Mm. You were given an area, it was like the field, like an ordinary field security section.
Which area were you given?
Oh, I was in the north end of the Ruhr. First of all, I was at a place called Burg Steinfurt, but I had to leave there because I developed a hernia. I had to go home and have that sort of stitched. And then I spent the rest of the war in, the rest of the service, rather, the war was over, in Recklinghausen. Where I was responsible for an area which included Gelsenkirchen, which is the sort of steel town of Germany, Bottrop and Gladbeck and Recklinghausen, and arrest Germans who were on the automatic arrest category and follow up any sort of subterfuge and all that sort of thing. It was interesting in that you were doing something active rather than just sitting on your backside drinking gin and playing the odd game and improving your German as well.
Did you catch any wanted Nazis?
Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
Many?
Oh, yeah, quite a few, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm.
What kind of things were they wanted for?
Well, atrocities. For example, the beast of... I was able to arrest with the assistance of the German police because it was outside my area a bit and I didn't want to give it to another FSO to do because I wouldn't have seen the results. The commandant of the concentration camp which had actually been at Recklinghausen, I took me great delight in taking him back there and putting him inside. Of course they let him go, didn't they? He escaped.
Was he recaptured?
I don't know, no idea. No idea, but I expect he possibly was. He was a pretty horrible specimen.
In what way?
Well, he was one of these sort of criminals, a typical sort of a horse vessel type, who was a pervert, of course. I remember, funny enough, I remember how I got to him. I got to him. I found his girlfriend, and she was actually acting as a scullery maid or something in a convent school. And when I arrested her, all she would say to start with was, "Ich habe nichts getan, ich bin... ein gutes katholisches Mädchen. I've done nothing. I'm a good Catholic girl." Now, my German wasn't good enough to interrogate these people really well. I had sergeants, and in particular, so far as women was concerned, I had a Dutch girl who was attached to us. How she became attached to us, I don't know. She was known by, her nickname was Woodbine. She was an absolute marvel. And she broke her down, just purely by interrogation. And the thing that rather shattered me was, she said to me, "I'm a good Catholic girl," and one thing and another. She related everything that had happened to a saint's day. Well, that was about the saint, so-and-so, and it's funny little things like that.
About things that she'd done or her boyfriend?
About things relating to the camp, yes. About what she was saying, and when was that? You'd say, "Oh, that was about so and so, the time of Saint Day, so and so." You see.
But did she work in the camp?
Oh, she went. She used to go around the camp with him. And
what kind of a pervert was he?
Oh, a pervert? Well, he was just a thoroughly unpleasant, typical... I don't know what his perversions were, but he was a sadist. He would take great delight in killing or maiming or hurting. You know, it's typical of... This happens in all communities. It wasn't refined. It's not refined generally, to the extent to which it was in the Nazi Party. Another thing I recall once, and I remember a NAFI manager bringing to me a bottle of liqueur, which had the bottom third of which had crystallized, and he said, "I'm a little bit." Concerned about this. He said, "I wonder if you could get it analysed for me." And so I summoned the the managing director of the local chemical works at Marlhuls, which is rather like summoning the director of ICI at Billing. And I gave him this bill. I said, could you analyze it for me, you see? And he came back with an analysis, and he said, yes, it certainly wouldn't do anybody any good. It was point something of fusel oil in it. It would kill most people, you see. So I then got talking to him, and he had, during the war, they were making the propellant for the V2s. And he had a lot of slave labor who was being used for this. And he said, you'd be surprised, he said, that they used to drink the propellant. I said, surely that would kill him. He said it was remarkable how many it didn't kill. But
just out of desperation for something to drink.
Yeah.
Any others who stick in your mind that you caught when you were doing this hunting work?
Not really, no. I mean, generally speaking, it was pretty low key, and you worked fairly closely also with the public safety officer, who was usually an ex-copper or a British copper who was attached to local military government. That was that. And then, of course, my demob came up. And
that was apparently in September 46. So you were doing the field security work for more than a year, right?
Yes, except I was taken out for two or three months for this operation. I mean, in those days, when you had a hernia, you lay on your back after the operation for 4 weeks, not like going out 2 hours after you had it under a local anaesthetic, as happens now.
But coming back to the field security work, how did you get your information initially about people?
You had a Fragebogen. Anybody who got a job, took a job, or was in any connected with anything, had to, particularly if it was connected with the military government, had to sign a Fragebogen, you see.
This is a questionnaire?
A question and answer. And there were automatic arrest categories. People who were automatically arrested because of what they had been doing. Now, you could sometimes pick these up from a Fragebogen, and if you gave him something to sign, he'd fill it. He'd sort of say that, well, I'm very sorry, but not only can't you not have the job, but I'm afraid you're arrestable. So that was how you picked up a lot. You also picked up from informers. You'd be surprised. I, for example, remember picking up somebody, and he said, why are you arresting me? Because I said you were an Oberscharführer in the Allgemeine SS, which was an automatic arrest category. That's an Oberscharführer equivalent to about a sergeant. And the Allgemeine SS were very much worse than the Waffen SS. In the Waffen SS, in the Allgemeine SS, sorry, in the Allgemeine SS, an Unterscharführer was arrestable, which is a corporal. In the Allgemeine, in the Waffen SS, you would start at Oberscharführer, which was a rank above that. Well, I can remember a case, as I say. I said, why did you arrest? And he said, I said, because you're automatic arrest, you're an Oberscharführer, and so and so. He said, well, why don't you arrest my brother? He said, he was also one, you see. And I said, well, if you give me his address, tell me where he is, I will. And he did. It's quite extraordinary. Or you'd get somebody and say, who'd come and say, do you know that Mr. Sanso, who's in such and such a house was an official of the Nazi Party, blah, blah, blah. And you say, thank you very much. And he, are you going to arrest him? Yes, I'll arrest him. Well, can I have his house?
This. But how would you know that people weren't shopping people for their own convenience?
Well, it didn't matter. You would probably find ample evidence there. Because we had all their records, you see. This was another thing. They were so wonderful, the Germans still are, at keeping records. And as likely as not, you had the local records from the police and from the local party and everything, and it was there in black and white. So, of course, the problem ultimately came that there weren't enough people to run the country. But so it was all a bit... but after 6 months or a year or so, it was time to get out, and it was all right.
But did you like doing the job or not?
Oh, I enjoyed doing... The point was that if you were still in the army and you were in part of the occupation force, the greatest problem was boredom. At least if you were in intelligence, you were concerned with something, and it could be very, very interesting indeed. It also enabled you to, you know, there was this nonsense about fraternizing and all that sort of thing. Well, that could be very restrictive in many ways, but it didn't affect you if you were in intelligence, that you were generally speaking on the job. And
you had to fraternize to do the job.
Of course you had to a certain extent, yeah. Mm.
The name of your unit, you put, was Section 33-...
Field Security Section, was that?
Yes.
Or 33 or 38, was it? I can't remember now.
33-980, is it?
Yes, could I see? Yes, I had two sections. The first one was Section 33, which is when I was at Berg Steinfurt. Then I had to go home for the operation. And then it was 98. And then...
At Recklinghausen.
At Recklinghausen. And then after that, it became... They split these sections up. They split my section up into three, and they became intelligence teams. And this was where they brought the sort of chutney label boys in, you know, military government. And that was time to depart, when it was sort of handed over to military government and taken out of the hands of the military.
Why do you call them chutney label?
Because it looked like a chutney label. It was not a disparaging term. It just looked like a chutney label on the which they wore instead of you see, I've got, if I can show you a moment.
Before we look at that, just let me ask you about IS-9. What do the letters IS stand for?
I think they stand for intelligence school, but it didn't mean a thing. It was an operational section of MI-9.